Unknown caller.
Mike?
Yeah, it is.
Hey, what's up? It's me, Turtle, with Enter the Shell.
Oh, hey, man. How you doing?
Good, good. Do you have a crowd in back of you? I just heard a bunch of applause. Okay, maybe that was...
No. That was I was watching a show on Netflix called Dirty Money about Donald Trump. I'm not a fan, so... Anyway.
Well, I mean, to be honest... All money is dirty, if you really think about it.
Physically, money is absolutely dirty. Trust me, it's disgusting.
I'm still in that phase where I still like to hold money, even though I know how dirty it is.
Yeah, you know, that's my thing, is cash is always king. So, like, I don't care what people's stance on anything is or what their price on anything is. When you have cash in your hand in front of them, you could always get a discount. You could always get something for a little cheaper. So it's always good to negotiate with cash. That's my motto. But anyway, I mean, so I don't care if you're buying merchandise for the band or whatever. If you negotiate the price and be like, oh yeah, by the way, if I pay you cash, how much is it? And it's always less.
That's a great tip. Now, anytime I go to your show, first of all, I'm going to ask for you. And then I'm going to be like, dude, I got cash. I need my cash discount.
I'm going to say $10 is $10.
but you'll throw in like a button or something, right?
Use this one. Right. But yeah. Well, hey, man, thanks for the request. We definitely appreciate it. It's cool to have, you know, some people interested in what we're doing.
I think a lot of people are interested in what you're doing. I am a huge ska fan. To see, anytime I even remotely see a ska band either playing or you know, it gets across and gets sent to me, I'm so interested in hearing them and just talking with them, because I love this music so much. It's actually one of my favorite musics. Not many people know about that. I know, like, my favorite band is, like, Radiohead or, like, Cake or, like, The Cure, that mm-hmm. kind of music. But whenever there's a ska band in town, I'm usually one of the first people that's trying to work out my schedule to try to go see them.
Awesome. Well, that's really cool.
Yeah. What is it about ska that you think gravitates to people?
Well, you know, that's a good question. I think that one thing about ska is ultimately it's about unity, right? So you can't really, whereas there are other scenes that are definitely unifying and they unify cultures, you know, hardcore punk was like that. And, you know, the early punk rock, first generation punk rock in any community was like that, just cause you had a bunch of freaks, you know, quote unquote, in their area that would band together, right? But I think ska is primarily based on, it's a unity-based music. So it's the blending of cultures, right? And that we get that from the two-tone era, obviously, of ska, which obviously takes place, you know, from England at the time where everybody was poor, and that was the unifying force. The poverty in England in the 70s knew no age or class or anything else. I mean, or race. Everybody, you know, everybody from a certain that didn't work a high-end white-collar job, and a very high-end white-collar job, was broke. So, and the fact that you have all these people living together in basically on top of one another, you know, in such a compacted area, I think, you know, anything that united them, they were always united in music. And years later, when you have that, you know, being translated and morphed from New York City, you know, or bands like the Toasters or any of the Moon Ska bands back in the day, and then later on in the 90s to have third wave, more of the California type of sound where it's ska punk and all that, the unity message kind of is the one through line that comes through it. So that also, the fact that it's just fun, you know, the bands are fun to watch. They typically go anywhere from a really fast paced, you know, punk sound all the way to a rock steady or a lover's rock sound. You get a lot of different variables at a ska show. So and there's some fashion involved with it as well. Dude, I don't know. I honestly think that there's a lot of different factors, but the through line for unity and just the music itself, it's great to see horns on stage. It's great to see that, you know, it's great to have these leads. It's more than, not that there's anything wrong with singer-songwriters or protest singers, but you know what you're going to get with a guy with an acoustic guitar, right? You kind of don't know what you get the more musicians you add. So you get eight or nine guys up there, you're like, wait, what the hell's going on here? This is going to be crazy.
Yeah, it's so true. Right now I am talking with Mike Baralt, the keyboard player in Bite Me Bambi. And let's talk about that. You know, anytime I think about a ska band forming, I always get the connotations of the Avengers being formed, in a sense, right?
Yeah, I guess. Depending on the band.
Right. Well, I mean, who was your Nick Fury to you, and was it kind of assembled like that? Like, were you just coming out of, like, a nightclub, and then Nick Fury just walks in, and he's just like, hey, man.
Do you mean originally? Or with Bite Me Bambi specifically.
With Bite Me Bambi.
Oh, with Bite Me Bambi specifically. Well, yeah, actually, that's a pretty good story. I'm a little older. You know, I've been in ska bands since the 90s. I played my first ska show in 94, actually. So if you can imagine all that. So I've known a lot of people involved in this scene. It was sort of like that, actually. I've been really good friends with Brian Mashburn, who's, him and I actually are the same age, went to the same high school. We went to Ware High School in Anaheim, California, where that's where Gwen Stefani and her brother Eric went. And so, you know, in my first initial ska bands that I played with, we opened up for No Doubt. It was no big deal. They always drew a crowd, but they drew a crowd of 200 people in the city of Anaheim, you know, at a teen center, you know? So we've always kind of been, it's always kind of been an ancillary group. And so with Brian, and Talina were starting Bite Me Bambi. I had known Brian for many, many years. And also T-Bone, our horn player, T-Bone was a founding member of Save Ferris, same as Brian Mashburn was. And T-Bone actually was kind of a local rock star as well, because he was in a local band here that we love called the Knuckle Brothers. And so I always really looked up to T-Bone when I was a kid. And we all just kind of became friends over a long period of time. And to be honest, I guess my Nick Fury would probably be Talina from the band, the youngest member of our band, not the youngest, but the front person of our band, because she, you know, we hang out socially. I mean, a lot of us all hang out socially. It's a very small scene. And, they were starting this new band, and she said, oh, you know, I really want to get a keyboard player in it. We should see if Michael do it. And all the other guys were like, oh, that's a good idea. I know we've known the guy for a really long time, and, you know, we're all friends. So I think Talina was probably my Nick Fury. She was the person who came to me. But to be honest, it was like putting on a comfortable jacket or a broken-in leather jacket or something, just because when I get the room with all these guys, I had never been in a band with Brian Mashburn before. We've known each other for 20-something years, and our bands have played together off and on forever. My old band, My Superhero, in the 90s, we used to promote shows, and we probably gave Save Ferris their first or second show. Well, the first show in front of a lot of people, that's for sure. Right. I don't know if it was their first show. It was probably like among in their top five shows, I'm sure, when they first started. And so, you know, we've always kind of had each other's backs, as you will with musicians. So Talina was the Nick Fury, and I think she put the crew together, based on people she knew were available. They had ended their band after Save Ferris had broken up years ago. It was called Starpool, and they were really big here locally, and so they had kind of gone on hiatus, and I think Talina saw an opportunity and was like, well, there's a lot of great musicians and songwriters that aren't really doing anything right now. Let's form the team.
Let's assemble.
Yeah. And the rest is history. I mean, we actually, our bass player, Ryan Brown, I think he was the first one she recruited, and he's been in a number of different bands. Most notably, he was in the Maxis for a little bit. He filled in, and he was in, now he's in Suburban Legends. They do one-off shows here and there. He plays with them. So he was kind of Talina's ride or die in the beginning. And then Dan Evans, he was the last person to play drums in Starpool. He came on board. He's also in a band called Half Past Two. And Kyle O'Donnell, he's a jazz musician and just great. He's our sax player. And, you know, whenever we have a break in a song, we kind of look at Kyle and go, yeah, can you just do something right there? And he just always does, you know? So it's pretty great. And then, you know, obviously Brian, Talina, and T-Bone, you know, kind of rounded out myself. So, yeah, it was a long-winded answer. I'm sorry.
It's no, it's cool. It's a great story, great answer. I was, you know, with all those people, to me, it seems like for you guys to create a song, it seems complicated with so many people and collaborations. How long does that take? Is that a quick cycle, or does it take a while?
Well, it depends on the song, really. You know, there are some songs that, you know, when you're writing them, they write themselves. They're done in 30, you know, not 30 minutes or 20 minutes, whatever it is. And there are others, though, that take a long time. We have some in the can now we've been working on for almost a year. Wow. So, you know, just getting the arrangements right. And realistically, with songwriting, for the band, and I will just answer this as briefly as I can. Talina usually has an idea for what she wants to say or a situation, and she'll put some chords together, and she'll collaborate with Brian Mashburn. I mean, Brian Mashburn wrote all the original Save Ferris songs, and so he's really good. I mean, he's a great songwriter. You know, he really knows he can right for just about any situation. So he'll come in with, change the chord here, do that. You know, I wrote a bridge for it. It needs lyrics. What, can you help me out with that? And so they kind of collab in that way. And then what Brian will typically do is he'll have an idea of how to arrange it. And he may do something in Pro Tools or some kind of, online, like, song creation platform, whatever. And he basically sends out, it sounds like an 8-bit, like, video game soundtrack when the band gets a hold of it. And then we're like, oh, okay. We typically all will collaborate from there. We might change the key. We might change a part or two, add a solo, whatever it is to kind of fill the song out. Typically the process doesn't take all that long. Once we get a hold of it, it probably takes Talina and Mashburn a little bit to put them all together, but it's the nature of songwriting. You have some that it's like, oh, I just put this one together and it works, you know, and others that just take a while. So it's just how it goes.
Yeah. Now you're the keyboard player, and usually keyboard players are usually off to the side, hidden in a ska band. You know, they got the drums.
Oh, like, totally.
You know, how does that make you feel? Like, are you fine being there? Are you used to being there?
You know what? I used to be the cope. We had two front men and my old man in My Superhero. So, and I played the accordion in that band as well. So
nice.
We had an accordion thing, which, you know, Orange County at the time, the wackier the better. So to have a 6'4" accordion player was pretty, I guess, something people liked. But to be honest, I don't really care. I had my time, up front, and it's invaluable experience because, you know, I can control a crowd and hype a crowd just like anybody. But, you know, Talina's better at it than me. So she can do all that. And to be honest, I don't mind sitting back. I'm at the point where I'm just glad that I get to play and have a good time with it and kind of contribute a verse to it. And ultimately, if we could play on bigger stages, that'd be great. On bigger stages, I'm not so far back in the dark. So, yeah.
You know what? I find it ironic, though, that you're in the back playing, but yet, you know, in all the interviews that I see, you're usually the person that's being interviewed for them, right?
It can be. Well, I just have the biggest mouth, I think. No, I guess. I don't know. That, like I said, I'm used to being more of a front man who gets interviewed, and I tend to have an opinion. You know, I'm kind of a big mouth and have an opinion about everything. So I think the band kind of looks to me for that. And really it's a division of tasks. If you have X amount of people that, you know, Talina's comfortable doing interviews and Mashburn's comfortable doing interviews, but Mashburn has a couple of kids and, you know, he may not have all the time. I don't have any kids and don't plan to. So, you know, I'm usually, it's either Talina or myself who you'll get. So luck of the draw, you got me this time.
Okay. Oh, no, you know what? I always enjoy, interview, like I, you know what I'm used to interviewing? I'm used to interviewing drummers and keyboardists all the time. And I always enjoy their perspective of everything. I think that they bring a much more of a light than usually like the singer, you know, or the main guitarist. That's just my personal opinion. Maybe that's just because that's all I've ever interviewed for the most part are you, like you guys, you know what I mean? And you guys are usually the ones that have the more command of the band because of that.
Well, I think that for us, it can be a thankless, more of a thankless, I don't want to say a tertiary, but a background position. And the reality is that the band needs me and I need them. So, so they do. I mean, you know, that there's a, I'm a crazy, music documentary guy, and I was actually watching, I have my own podcast as well about it. And, you know, the music is like a life thing for me. It's not necessarily a hobby. But I was watching this, oddly enough, about the REM record that came out in like, in the early 90s, their big record and, Out of Time. And I'm watching this documentary and the guitar player, Peter Buck, made a statement that I agree with. He's like, you know, I did a tour one time of an aircraft carrier and everybody on that aircraft carrier had one thing in common, whether you were scraping barnacle off the side or you were the captain in charge. you had the attitude, they all had the attitude that without me, the ship will sink. And I think that's really what a band absolutely needs, because you can have a great front person, but if the formula is off just a little bit, the cocktail doesn't taste nearly as good. So it doesn't, you know, if you find something that works, and that's my advice to any band, stick with it, make it work. Like, don't, you know, you don't know what unforeseen spice in the mix that your bass player or your keyboard player or your drummer really brings to it until they're gone, and then it's too late. So we don't know what Nirvana would have sounded like if Dave Grohl didn't drum with them, because unfortunately, I remember fortunately, Dave Grohl got the job when they were, you know, doing 800 cap rooms, and you know, he became the guy who drummed on the biggest record of alternative music. But we wouldn't know. I mean, if it was somebody else, would they have done that? Who knows? Probably, but who knows? You know, so, yeah.
And would Dave Grohl be Dave Grohl without Nirvana? You know what I mean?
Well, you know, and so I would argue no. I would argue no, I wouldn't. But that's just me. Dave Grohl, you know, again, going back to music documentaries, there's a really great one called Salad Days. And if you haven't seen it, I recommend it. It's about the DC hardcore punk scene. It's really great because it talks about Minor Threat and Fugazi and Rites of Spring and all these bands, but it talks about Dave Grohl. They interviewed Dave Grohl because he was a teenager living there for like a year, and he was in a band, and you know, he was in that scene. It's great to kind of see the background of all these guys that are just bit players, you know, in these other scenes. I would argue though that no, he wouldn't. Who knows? Yeah. We'll never know now, right? In this reality that we live in, Dave Grohl's a superstar. So.
And I'm fine with that. I'm fine with that. Me too. You know?
Me too. I like Dave Grohl. I think, you know, I watched Dave Grohl open up for the Police like 10 years ago. I watched the Foo Fighters open up for the Police at a stadium. I never go to stadium type shows. But, you know, the Police, hey, they're playing stadiums. Why not? But not like I'm ever going to see him again, right?
Yeah.
So I went, and Foo Fighters opened up, and man, Dave Grohl had the task of running around Dodger Stadium, you know, getting people excited and all this stuff. And man, he did it. He played a solo on top of a porta potty. Like,
oh, cool. You're
screaming, running around. It was cool. It was really cool.
Now, do you think
good
that's,
front man.
Do, you think, do you think that's going to happen with you? Like, you're going to play a keyboard on top of a porta potty or any of those?
Well, hey man, I'm willing to do it. If you guys can get a keyboard on top of a porta potty. Yeah. It'd be better if it was like a Hammond organ and okay. There was a porta potty.
Yeah. Deal.
But yeah, no, I actually, in another band I was in a while ago, I played the keytar, which is the most guitar-envious instrument out there. And I got to tell you, man, if I have an opportunity to whip out a keytar, I probably would.
I mean, in your band meetings or you know, when you're doing a song, do you ever just say, you know what, this song could need some keytar, and then you just pull it out?
Have you done that? Actually, Talina, our singer, played guitar in a ska band, briefly in a ska band here, locally, and for a minute, a couple of years before she started Bambi, and we often talk. We have brought it up. You know what this song could use? We could do an '80s thing, and I could just bust the guitar out. It's like, yeah, I'd do a little crowd surfing with the guitar. It'd be awesome. For me, it's hard because I'm such a big dude that you know, if I jump into the crowd, people would be like, nope.
Yeah.
Let him go. Just let him go. You
know, at that point, you're not jumping into the crowd. You're jumping onto the floor. You know what
I
mean?
Yeah, exactly. You just got to expect the floor. That's the thing. If you expect the floor and you get picked up by the crowd, hey, man, that's all the better. But just expect to hit the floor.
Yeah, very good. You know, in my head, I would love to see a keytar off with you and her. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Just hey. Dueling, going at it. I think that would be like a fun like interlude or something like that, you know?
You know, what's really funny is that when I first met Talina's parents, I was at a show, and I was just, you know, this before Bambi had started, and this local promoter here made the mistake of booking like five or six ska bands at
Holy
his
cow.
Irish pub. Yeah, Irish pub with just like a little four-channel PA.
Oh, shit.
And Talina's other band. They're called Unicorn Injection. She still plays with them, actually. They were playing. And so we were they made the mistake of telling all the bands that they could drink for free. They didn't, nobody told them that there's some of these bands that have like nine dudes in it. But B, I don't know what it is about ska musicians and drinking, but man, we can put it away. Hard stuff and beer. I don't know what it is. It's a thing. So we're drinking that night, and she says to her, introduce me to her parents, Mike, I want you to meet my mom. And I'm like, oh, nice meeting you. And she goes, this guy's a real guitar player, not a poser like me. And I was like, is that an honor? Is that a dubious honor? I was like, thanks.
Yeah. I think that's an honor. You know what I mean?
Yeah, sure. Okay.
I don't know if you guys ever had a keytar off, but I mean, you could probably waste her, you know?
Coming soon. Who knows? Hey, you know what? Come to see Bambi every time they play. You might be that show where we decide to roll out with a keytar off.
You know what? You need to text me when that happens but just me. Like, don't tell anybody, but you know.
Don't tell anybody else.
Yeah.
Just so you know. Okay.
Yeah, because I know, I mean, I'm not saying I'm the guy that, like, gave you the idea or like
you oh know, yeah no I, you definitely you were the grease on the squeaky wheel there, that's for sure, man. Not saying it was totally your idea, but you know, there, you definitely had a contribution in that. All so right. We'll say it, this one's for Turtle, and we'll play it.
Thanks, man, I appreciate it. Very cool. I love you.
Thank awesome. You so well, you know what? It's early on in our relationship. I think that if we really focus on learning what makes each other's tick, I might love you too.
You mean you don't love me already? This is crazy.
You know, I'm hard to trust, man. I'm a grizzled old soul. Yeah.
You know what? You do love your fans, and that's because right now all of your music is free, right?
Yes. So, yeah.
That's complete love. That's complete love.
Well, don't get me wrong. I mean, we have it for sale on iTunes, but we also have it on Spotify and the free services as well. Just because, I mean, look, here's our thing, man. We're lucky that we get to do this. You know, there's very few, I've been in enough bands to know that sometimes they work and sometimes they don't. And we're lucky enough to have fans that come to the shows and whatever our cocktail of Bite Me Bambi that we're making, it's working right now. So our whole thing is let's get everybody as engaged as we possibly can. As soon as we release something, you'll have it. You know, you'll have it. And with our thing as well, it's kind of our strategy, and for lack of a better word, that let's release videos, because a lot of people just get their music from YouTube, right? So let's just release something to YouTube, and we'll have a single to back it up on Spotify, and it'll also be for sale on iTunes if you want to buy and support the band. But the truth of the matter is, if that's the way people are viewing stuff, or listening, then let's give that to them. Let's give them what they do, what they want. And for us, it works, because as a band, it costs so much to produce a record, a whole album, you know, and to have 12 songs or 13 songs or however many on, have them all produced and mastered and mixed and all that. And the truth of it is, you put that album out and you get the same amount of attention for one single as you will for that whole record. So the great part about it is that it's cheaper for us to adhere to what everybody wants to do anyway and just put out these videos, and then in the end we have five or six, which we're rapidly coming up on that, we'll have five or six singles together. We'll put out an EP that has everything, you know, for the collector, somebody who wants a colored vinyl EP of all the songs. There's DJs that want that, they can have it, but for the most part we want people to have access to everything that we do the minute we have it done and recorded. The Hot Lava, the single that we have the video for out now, we had that mastered and released within like 7 days or 8 days. I mean, so it came right from the master. We'd all approved it. Sounds great. We had the video in the can kind of ready to go. And let's just release this. Let's get it out so everybody can have it. So no joke. The lead time from me getting the approval, the approved master, to it being available for everybody else is as short as possible, as short as we can possibly make it.
You know, speaking of Hot Lava, your current single, and by the way, earlier we played your last single, which was Crazy. What was the difference between that time frame between Crazy and Hot Lava? Was there a big difference or anything?
No, not necessarily. We've been playing Crazy for a while live. With Crazy, we basically, I found a, well, I didn't find him. He's been in the world forever, but there's a producer, Cameron Webb, that we really like. We've always worked with the same people. And so, in the fall of last year, we're like, you know, we should start putting out these singles in a greater, you know, clip. And so we had some recordings we had to finish. So Cameron, through a mutual friend, this guy named Corey Pollack, used to be a guitar player in the Aquabats. He put me on to Cameron Webb, and Cameron's worked with, I mean, he probably did the last three or four Motorhead records. He's worked with Kelly Clarkson. He's done two or three Aquabats records. He's Bad Caddies. I mean, you name it. He's a, like, yeah, I mean, I can't even say. He's got he's got a huge list. Matt Skiba, Pennywise, I mean, you name it. Anyway, he's a local guy, lives right around where we're all from in Southern California. And, we went to him and I said, look, you know, we need to finish up some of these songs. And, with Crazy, he heard it. He's like, this one's nearly done. We just need to do a couple of things. And he kind of mixed it for us and we had it, mastered and, we put it out. As soon as it was done, we were thinking like, what can we do? We got to shoot a video now for it. We weren't kind of ready for it. And Talina just did the video. She did a lyric video for it. And I think it's great. You know, so that process, it didn't take very long once it was done. It was just getting around to doing it. And, so from the fall of last year, we've really focused on getting all of our stuff out, as soon as we can. So.
Gotcha. Now, Hot Lava, your new single, that song is about chances and basically asking someone to take a chance on you. What is it about love and gambling? You know, mean,
well, everything. Seriously, man, life is a gamble, I think, right? You never know. And this, based on the lyrics, I mean, I didn't write the lyrics of the song, but based on what I know of it, you know, it's about someone trying to take a chance on you in love. But the reality is, man, everything is a chance. I mean, to be honest, if had I not gone to I wouldn't have met my girlfriend had I not gone to a seminar that I didn't want to go to. And I took a chance on the seminar and I ended up walking out. And 10 years later, I ran into this girl again and now she's my girlfriend. So had I not gone to that, who knows if I ever would have met her, right? So you think about all the opportunities you have every day, and I think that's kind of what the song is like. It's about that pining of someone where it's like, look, man, I know for a fact that if you and I were to give this a shot, it would be a great thing. And, that's pretty cool. It's a pretty cool, message to have. It's definitely something that everybody's felt. I know that. So right. I think Talina's really hit it on the head as far as the lyrics go with that song. So, yeah, I don't know if that answers your question, but.
Yeah, totally. But, you know, but my connotation was like, what does that have to do with lava? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. Well, I think, man, the love that she feels is burning like hot lava, man. She knows it. She knows it to her core that she's
okay.
she's got this magma in her that's like burning for this person. So there it is.
Yeah, I mean, if that's not the right answer, it is now. You know,
it is now. That's the definite. We've made it the right answer. Yeah, whoever has the loudest voice wins. Like, it's like a Donald Trump thing. I'm just gonna yell louder than everybody else, and no, you'll think that's the truth.
Yeah, you know all the words.
You know all the words, exactly.
Lastly, Orange County, that to me seems like the epicenter for ska. Anytime I hear of a band that's a ska band, 9 times out of 10, they come from Orange County. What is it about that county that makes ska?
Well, you know... Man, that's if I knew that, I would bottle it. I don't really know.
It's strange, though, right?
It is strange. It is strange, and to be honest, as a fan of this music for so long, it really started a lot of it. I'm going to blame Eric Stefani. I'm going to blame him because Eric started No Doubt, and he was like the guy who really wanted to push that scene, there's so many bands that came out from No Doubt playing, and not that we were devoid of ska bands, but in LA you had Fishbone at the time that was playing, and the Untouchables that were playing quite a bit, and Oingo Boingo was originally more of a ska band back in those days. So you had a lot of these scene going on, but I think they wanted to contribute their verse, you know, and No Doubt, when they started, they were a straight ahead ska band. I mean, it is what it is. That, yeah. They absolutely were. And so we're talking like the early or the mid 80s when they started. They were playing with funk bands and other things, but they were pretty much straight ahead ska band. And their sound I always thought by the time I was of age and going to shows a lot, they were more of a soul band than anything, because they had these great horn leads and some ska songs, but a lot of rock songs too. But I, to be honest, I think that once you went to one of the shows back then, that Orange County really at the time had we basically had Sun Shining All the Time, and we were of this generation, this probably like a Generation X kind of a generation, where we were kind of not nearly as precious as kids are now. You know, so like we were left to sit at home, or if you skateboarded anywhere, even on the street, you could get a ticket. You know, like there was no skate parks. There was no places that for us to play our music. There was no places for us to do anything. So we had to do everything kind of DIY. And because we built the Orange County scene, and I say we, meaning just because I had a small part in it, but I think you have bands like No Doubt, and then you have promoters back in the day. There's a promoter named John Pannell, who was a very good friend of mine these days, who started booking shows in hotel ballrooms. The first one he did, No Doubt played, and they had 1,000 kids show up. You know, a few years later, I started doing a series of shows called the Big Ska Shows. We did them in roller rinks, a big roller rink, and we had 1,000 kids show up, you know. And so it was these little promoters that would just book bands, and you would go to a show and they would be infectious, because the ska scene accepted everyone. It accepted everyone for how they were. There was a group of dudes that hung out called the Plunger Liberation Front, that had name cards, laminated name cards they would wear, just wearing the wackiest stuff, carrying plungers with goggles on. They would show up to a show. You have guys with 70s, like, flared pants and suits and stuff show up, with their dad's wide ties and things like that, and they would show up. And you have skater kids and punks and Rastas and all these dudes, Rude Boys and stuff, that would show up to ska shows, and it was a literal melting pot. And I think once you went and you felt that acceptance after kind of being a latchkey kid and not having anything that was yours, you know, Orange County really became this cauldron where everybody was accepted. Didn't care what you look like, what your band sounded like. I mean, hell, a lot of the bands weren't great, but you know, a lot of them weren't great, but it was the fact that you were playing. I was like, yeah, this is dope. You go, man. Fuck it. Play your show. Get up there. And, there was a band years ago called Wash that I absolutely loved, that would just, they would make thrash music. Like, they would drop reverb boxes on the ground and dress up in like weirdo costumes, and they would just open up stuffed animals and let stuffing go everywhere, like, in the crowd. You know, the Aquabats early on, they would throw marshmallows into the crowd, and the floor would be just sticky and just covered with marshmallow residue. I mean, they were just wacky kids just out expressing ourselves and having a good time. So I think that's the long-winded answer of why ska is so big here, because there's always, even as small as it's been in the past, there's always been a scene for it, you know? So I think that's why a lot of bands come from here, because we have a built-in kind of crowd. We built it well 20 years ago, and now it's still a thing.
It's flourishing.
Yeah, you could say.
Yeah. Thank you. My guest has been Mike Baralta. You can find him on Bite Me Bambi. Go search for him, Google him, hashtag them Bite Me Bambi. But
yeah, Instagram's always good. Facebook as well. You can, we're on there.
Yeah, you're on all those platforms. But most importantly, go out and support them. I know in the summer, hopefully everything will be nice and what I like to say, tranquilo. So, you know, catch him later on in the year. You're going
to
have
a good time. Yeah, I wish we had something to I wish we had something to really push, but everything's kind of on hold right now. So just give us a follow and you'll find us.
Yeah, yeah. And I can't wait for you guys' first show. I know it's going to probably be epic. I know everybody's show is going to be epic because, you know, everyone's finally going to be out and about. But again, thank you again so much. The band, Bite Me Bambi, look for them on Facebook, Instagram, and of course, don't forget the hashtag Bite Me Bambi.
Please don't shut that door.